perek, yudal parshim b'tzara kafshin ayin dal perek yudal pasuk gimel. Where should this go, on top of or together with? I appreciate that. Thank you. Right. Just goes together. Perek yudal pasuk gimel. It says the yotza akoin on lichut v'machane. The coin goes out to outside the camp. V'ra'a akoin v'nihi hinei nirpa negas saras min tzarua. The coin sees, but the negas saras was healed from the guy who had saras. So the question is like this. The wording is mihut la'machane, from outside to the camp, which is weird wording. The way you should have written it is the yatsa kohen el chutz la'machane. That's the way to put it. El chutz la'machane, or la'chutz la'machane, or something like that, or la'chutz ha'machane. It's just the mihutz la'machane seems a little bit weird. So what are we trying to get at? So the parties Yosef says the following. He says it was very difficult for any kohanim to relate to the rest of the people. They were just different. They had different lives. Regular Bnei Yisrael were working all day long. The kohanim spent their entire day learning, in 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks out of the year, working in the Beis Hamikdash, not including obviously Yom Tovim when they were there. They just lived high, lofty lives that were spiritually based, and they had to do. I mean, if anybody ever tells you that there's no such thing as kol in the Torah, you might as well just punch them in the face and tell them, what do you think the Levim and Kohanim did all day? Levim and Kohanim are the definition of kol being paid for by everybody else, and it was 1/12 of the nation. So if you want to take 12 million Jews and make 1 million of them kol, you have an actual reason for it based on what the Torah says. Then forget, how did the economy work? I'm sure it was fine back then. It all worked out fine. You have 1/12 of your nation learning Torah. Everybody else will make more money because of that. But regardless, that's the idea of what the Kohanim and Levim. Is that enough political issues? Not even in Israel, we don't have to deal with that. So anyway, regardless, that's like that. So he spent all of his time, he was doing his spodidus, spending his time staying away from evil people. It was to the point where he could not understand how a person could sin. How could a person spend his time doing something that's wrong? If he knows it's wrong, he has to stay away from it. See, a person like that, on that level, is going to have gaiva. I mean, look at this guy who speaks Lashon Hara, and he lies, and he cheats, and he steals, and he does all these terrible things. He's looking at me, he's such a terrible person, says the Kohen. How could I be able to help him whatsoever? What does he have anything to do with me? How dare he do such things and then pretend to go to the Beis HaMikdash to bring the Korban? How could he do such a thing like that? So, to that, Kadosh Baruch Hu looks to the Kohen and says, look, it's really easy for you, in the position that you're in, doing what you're doing, to say that that guy's doing something that's wrong. For you to be in your position to sit in the base medrash and not deal with any woman all day long or any business dealings all day long, to be able to sit there and to say, well, yeah, you got to stay away from sin and you got to stop doing bad things. Of course you think that you should stay away from bad things. So a Kadosh Baruch Hu looks at the Kohen and says, assume, put yourself in their position for a second. Put yourself out in the shuk. Live the way they do. Don't sit there in a sheltered world and say, I think that I'm better than them because I don't get involved in these problems, these things don't happen to me. The reason why these things don't happen to you is because you put yourself in a better position than they did. If you'd be in their position, you may be worse than he is. And if he was in your position, put it the other way, he might be better than you are. Meaning, don't deal with the fact that where you are in that. And of course, a person could say to himself, but I made good decisions, he made bad decisions. Of course a person can say that, and for that you'll be rewarded. But in this world, we're not dealing with that. When it deals with looking at another person and thinking whether or not I should have gaiva, it's look at that person and say, what would I be if I was in his shoes right now? What would I be if I was like him right at this moment? It's very difficult to stay honest when you have so many opportunities in front of you to make a lot of money. It's very difficult to stay, let's say, outside of Arias, when you have so many girls that are around you like that. It's difficult. So we tell the Kohen, we want you to go out from your position, mihutz la'machane. We're telling the Kohen not to go outside the camp to go meet the Mitzorah, although that's the Pashup shot of the Pasuk. Go outside to go meet the guy who has Tzaras and outside the camp. We want you to go out of your comfort zone, Mr. Kohen. We want you to go mihutz, from outside la'machane, to the machane that you're in. Go out for a little bit and see what it's like out there, and you'll realize that it's not easy for these people to be there. Once you're able to do that, then it's going to be a bigger, better world. You'll be able to be mashpi on others. Other people will be able to be mashpi on you. Well, in a good way. And you'll be able to understand where they're coming from. You'll be able to help them. And right now, you can't understand them. They can't understand you. You're in a different world. That's what he's telling the Kohanim, to go mihutz la'machane, to understand where they're coming from, says the Paras Yosef. But that doesn't mean that they should just get involved in everything the other people are getting involved with. Not everybody is made for that. There's a famous story with the Gro that couldn't, one Erev Yom Kippur, listen, I won't tell you, I don't have any verification on this story. It's a story that's brought down in the Gro's biography. It's brought down in the Sefer, the Panini Meshulchan Gro. It's a famous story, but I have no verification if this actually happened. But the Gro, one Erev Yom Kippur, said, I have no chatayim to do tshuva for. So we all have that problem, you know how it is. We get to Erev Yom Kippur and just like, what did I do wrong this year? I can't think of one thing. But let's assume that the Gro had already done tshuva on everything that he had done wrong during the year. So he came to Erev Yom Kippur and he was sitting there and he's like, what am I supposed to do? I have no idea what I could possibly do tshuva for. So he called in a magid, possibly the Dubno magid, and asked him for help. And he asked him, could you please help me, you know, to be able to find a sin that I had done wrong? The latter asked, Dubno magid asked if he could speak freely. And the Gro said he could say whatever you want. So Dubno magid said, the way that he said it was, you think you're so great sitting in a room by yourself? The Gro never left his room. Never left his room. The shiurim would take place in there. Barely ever did he even let people in. He davened by opening up his windows and listening in to the shul that was davening over there so that he'd be able to hear things. He never left his room. He never walked outside. I mean, we're talking about a person who was there by himself, said to Dubno magid, try going out there in the world out there and try getting involved in business and work and see how big of a tzaddik you'd be. Here, you're a big tzaddik because there's nothing to sin. What are you going to do? Not make a bracha? That's what you're going to do? In your world that you're in right now, of course you're a big tzaddik. Go outside and go do anything. Anybody could be like you and you could be like anyone else. And the Gro started to cry. Started to say, you have to understand, I know that if I went out there, I wouldn't be as great. But that's one of the reasons why I have to be in here. And I can tell you, said the Vilna Gaon, nobody would be as great as me if they would be inside my room. That's the reason why I'm here and they're not. He said, that's there. But he understood that that's part of it. You have to understand where your position is and where you're there. It's hard to put yourself in other people's shoes. But when you do, you start to realize why he is what he is. And once you start realizing why he is what he is, you can understand him a little bit better. You can be down the chops close. To be honest with you, what do you think HaKadosh Baruch Hu does? You know HaKadosh Baruch Hu is taking 99.9% of the world and taking them and throwing them in Gehenna? That's very, very unlikely. Very highly unlikely. Everybody has something. When was the last time you went to a funeral and they were like, yep, the guy's terrible? That ever happened? Ever been there for that? Of course they don't. Because there's always something good about the person. Always. And sometimes there's great things about the person. We just don't always see it because our eyes are covered. We don't always get to see what the real truth is. In Pasuk Yud-Aleph it goes on and it says, the hemi da kohen ha-mitaher is the ish mitaher vo sum lit ne'asham pasach ha-moed. The kohen, who is the mitaher, the one who is purifying this guy, he takes the tahor man and he puts him in front of the ha-moed. Now, the question is, what is this ha-kohen ha-mitaher? Why are we calling him the one who is mitaher? What does that have to do with anything? The Ben Ish Chai asks that question. He gives a mashal. It's a good muscle. Talmud Chacham is walking down the street and he hears crazy noises coming from a bar as he goes by. So he decides he's going to look inside and go see what's going on inside the bar. It's a Jewish neighborhood. He knows that they're all Jews and everything like that. Goes in and he sees a gambling party. Bunch of people drinking together. Possible that there were other things going on. There was gambling and drinking and everything like that. They're playing blackjack, poker, whatever it was. And they're sitting there just throwing their lives away. So he has Kinas Hashem. He has this zealousness for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And yells at them to stop horsing around and change their lives. What are you guys going to do? Are you going to do this your whole life? You're going to be gambling and drinking and doing all this your entire lives? He said. He's so fierce. I don't think I have any others, but he's so fierce that they promise to stop that very moment from doing what they're doing. They stand there and right there they cash in all their chips. They give everything to the Talmud Chacham. They thank him for saving their souls as a fine for their sins. And they say, you know what? We have to work on ourselves. You're 100% right. We haven't done anything. We haven't done anything at all. We have to start working on ourselves right now. They do it. Talmud Chacham sits there. As he leaves, they all take up all their chips, they cash it in, give the cash, and they take it and they give it over to the Talmud Chacham. Say, let this be a pidyon for our souls. So each one of them gives him money. The Talmud Chacham, who had no living, wasn't making any money any other way, just made a ton of money off all these guys. So a year passes. Talmud Chacham needs money. He's marrying off a daughter. That's usually how it goes. He's marrying off a daughter and he needs to get money somehow. He's looking around and he said, how am I going to make money? And he remembers, you know, last year I went to that bar and I saw a bunch of guys there and I yelled at them and they gave me money. So I should do the exact same thing. Should do the exact same thing. He got up and he walked over to the side and sure enough, by the bar with the exact same people as the year before. The exact same people are all sitting inside there. And he runs inside and he goes in and he says, stop it, everybody, what are you doing? I came to you last year. How can you keep doing this? Why are you wasting your lives? Why are you drinking your lives away? And he's screaming at them. But this time, the result is not the exact same thing. they get up and they start hitting him. They throw empty bottles at him. They start swearing at him. They said, get out of here before we beat you up even further. The guy runs outside, Tom Calcom runs for his life outside of the bar. He can't figure out what had happened. Last year he went in and everybody listened, everybody did everything he said. This year he went in and they started throwing things at him and ran it. What happened? What was the difference between last year and this year? Says the Ben Ish Chai. This Talmid Chacham went to a Rav, usually. In the Ben Ish Chai Meshalim, it's referring to the Ben Ish Chai himself. This Talmid Chacham went in, let's assume, it's the Ben Ish Chai, went into the Ben Ish Chai and said, what's the difference? What happened? Why did everything change? The Ben Ish Chai told him. It's simple. Very simple. The first time when you walked in because you wanted to do a mitzvah l'shem shamayim. You wanted to help those guys. And since you wanted to help them, you had the Shekhinah resting upon you. When you had the Shekhinah resting upon you, they saw the Shekhinah and they were afraid. They had an awe. They looked at your face and they were scared. So they understood that you were saying something l'shem shamayim. You had kinah for them. You weren't doing it for yourself. And they immediately said, we'll stop. We realized how we're wrong. And they knew it. But this time you didn't go in l'shem shamayim. This time you were doing it for yourself. You went in because you wanted money. And because you wanted money, you walked in, and they saw that on your face. They saw on your face, you weren't doing this l'shem shamayim, you were doing it because you wanted a bit of money. So immediately they looked at you and said, get out of here. And that was their natural reaction. You got the natural reaction to somebody who comes in and tries to give muster to a bunch of guys sitting in a bar. What do you think is going to happen? Of course they were ready to beat you up. Of course they wanted to kill you. That's the natural reaction you would have gotten. Just before, there was siyata d'shmaya to be able to help you. So that's the idea about a Kohen. Why is he called the Kohen HaMitaher? Because it depends how he does his work. If the Kohen is into his work because he's expecting to get meat from the korbanos, or even the skin of an ola, or if he's expecting to be able to eat the flour, or do anything because he's happy, he's getting something out of it. Maybe he'll even get a tip. Maybe he's doing it just for the tip. He's waiting for a little bit of money. If that's what the Kohen is doing, then the guy who's bringing him the korban realizes that. The guy who's bringing him the korban sits there and says to him, this is not helping me at all. See, if you do it in the right way, l'shem shamayim, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you to work in the Beis HaMikdash, then the guy who's bringing the korban will feel it. He'll do tshuva. He'll think about it. He'll realize that he has to work on himself. That's one thing. But if it's not, then immediately he starts lowering himself and saying, listen, I don't really feel it. The guy won't do tshuva. The guy will not be a metaher. You want to be a real Kohen? You want to be a Kohen HaMetaher that allows a tahara process to happen by doing it l'shem shamayim and not for yourself. The Kohen does it that way, then it's going to come out in a good way, and that's the idea behind it. Let's go to the second page over here. There's an unreal Orach Chaim HaKadosh that I found in my notes from 2001. It's pretty far back. So 2001, it says the following. There's an Orach Chaim that literally made me jump up and dance. It was so awesome. It was on Wednesday night, and I have no Adam because it was late, but I will tell you that I did jump up and dance. I was like, this is the craziest Orach Chaim I've seen in my life. The Zohar says that all the other nations are tzaras to Bnei Yisrael. In other words, it's a similar idea. Just like when we speak Lashon Hara, when it ends up happening, we get tzaras. That's the idea. That's what it's supposed to be. Nowadays, because we no longer have tzaras, and tzaras doesn't exist, for whatever reason is out there, nowadays, the other nations of the world become our tzaras if we speak Lashon Hara. Meaning, if we speak Lashon Hara, we go into Golos, and we're subjugated under their nation. In other words, they're in charge of us, and we have no way of getting ourselves out until we stop speaking Lashon Hara. That's the idea. So Lashon Hara, back then, you got tzaras. Lashon Hara, now we go into Golos and they're in charge of us, and that's what's going to be. That's the idea. I guess you could even say it's a Mida Keneged Mida. He doesn't say this, but it makes sense. If you speak Lashon Hara against your friend, then you're going to have people that you're going to want to speak Lashon Hara about in charge of you. People that will only do evil. If you think your friends are doing evil, now HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to put people that are going to do evil to you. They'll be the people in charge of you right now. So that makes sense now. We were saved from Mitzrayim because of five things. But one of the famous ones is that we didn't speak Lashon Hara. I know we didn't change our clothing, didn't change our names, didn't change our languages, and we didn't have Gilui Arayos. But the fifth one is we didn't speak Lashon Hara. And because we didn't speak Lashon Hara, we were able to get out of Golos. Lashon Hara brought us in, so we were able to get out by stopping our speech of Lashon Hara. That's the idea of what Mitzrayim was. That's the first puzzle. So we're going to look it all the way through, and I have the psukim right there, and they're listed on the sheet itself. Zos tia Torah HaMetzorim. This is the Torah, the story of a Mitzorah, of the Jews who were Mitzorayim, who had Saras in Galus, meaning surrounded by nations that did not like us. But this is not the story of how he got there. This is the story of B'yom Taharaso, on the day that he got better, on the day that he worked on himself and he decided he was going to stop and stop speaking Lashon Hara. This is the day where all of a sudden he's able to get out of all the problems that he was in. Now, if we do so, Memela, once that happens, Memela, we're closer to Hashem. We find ourselves in a state where it's as if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with us. Now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is known as a Kohen. That's one of the reasons the men asked Rabbi Gamliel, how could HaKadosh Baruch Hu have buried Moshe Rabbeinu to go on Sot and Daf Yud Gimel? How could HaKadosh Baruch Hu have buried Moshe Rabbeinu? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a Kohen and he can't be Metami himself. And the answer of Rabbi Gamliel takes a lot of work. He says he was able to fill himself with fire. And thus, with the Torah, which is known as fire, he was able to be Matar himself. That's work for another time. He went ahead and he said that because HaKadosh Baruch Hu was known as a Kohen. Thus, the end of the pasuk is, V'huva el HaKohen. You'll be brought to the Kohen, meaning you'll be brought closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. On the day that you are Tahor, you're Matar yourself from speaking Lashon Hara, you'll be brought closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. At that moment, the other nations will be chayiv for everything that they did against the Jews. They're going to be punished for every little bit of what they've done. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take on the fight himself. He is going to want to fight. It's not going to be through anybody else. Hashem is going to put himself in the fray. He's going to say, I'm going to take it up on myself. I'm going to fight them. B'yotza HaKohen El Michutz L'Machaneh. The Kohen, Hashem, will go out. Michutz L'Machaneh means outside of Eretz Yisrael, to the other nations of the world where the Jews are being subjugated by the other nations. He will go outside to that area. The raw Kohen. And the Kohen will see what the Jews are doing and what the non-Jews did to them. Meaning Nirpa Negat, and he sees that the Jews have healed themselves, that the Tzeruah, which is B'nai Yisrael, the people who are speaking Lashon Hara, have healed themselves from that Lashon Hara. They've been able to bring themselves up and they've been able to do tshuva. So what do you do? The Tziva HaKohen. HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes a command and tells Beis Din Shomala, it's time for Mashiach. Now we all know the Gemara in Sukkah, Daf Nun Beis. If anybody's doing Daf Yomi, you just did it not too long ago. There's a Mashiach ben Yosef and a Mashiach ben David. There's a Mashiach ben Yosef that's supposed to come along first. He fights in the war of Gog, who's the king of Magog. I know it's always confusing. People think it's Gog versus Magog. It ain't. Gog is the king of the country called Magog. Okay, Magog is mentioned in Noach. He's one of the children of the B'nai Noach. Okay, Gog of Magog comes along, and on the other side is Mashiach ben Yosef and B'nai Yisrael, as well as whatever nation is on their side. But that's Mashiach ben Yosef. In that war, Mashiach ben Yosef is supposed to die. And Mashiach ben David eventually comes around and makes peace, and whoever is supposed to be evil dies, whoever is supposed to be good is able to live, and eventually that's the ultimate Yemosa Mashiach, the real Yemosa Mashiach. So here it goes. Tziva HaKohen, HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands and says it's time for the two Mashiachs. Now a bird is always a reference to a neshama that's able to fly. A high up neshama. Sometimes it refers to a ger tzedek who's able to fly up into the heavens. That's Tzipora. Right? Tzipora was a Gioras. Yisro comes from the Lashon of Tur, which is a pigeon. There are many different references to Gerim being bird names. But it also stands for a great Talmid Chachamim, and in this case, he's Lokach Lamitaher. I'm sorry?
This isn't
going to be a Gilgal. This is just a remez. So the remez is he takes for the Mitaher, meaning he takes for B'nai Yisrael Shte Tziporim Chayos Tahoros. Two birds that are alive, meaning they can't be dead, so that knocks out a couple people. That's number one. That they're going to be Chayos Tahoros, and they have to be pure. There's going to be two of them altogether. There's going to be a Mashiach ben Yosef, and there's going to be a Mashiach ben David. We add to them a schus of the three avos. Eitz Erez Shni Solas Seizo. Eitz Erez, the cedarwood, refers to Avram Avinu. First of all, Avram Avinu had a tree that he always had in his backyard that was supposed to be the Elon that he had, in which people would be, the guests would be able to sit under. That was the Eshel Avraham that he had. But aside from that, the Eitz Erez means that it's a cedarwood. Cedar is supposed to be strong with many, many branches. And that's Avram Avinu, who had many, many branches throughout the entire world, that his children survived throughout the entire world. That's Avram. Shni Solas is a reference to Yitzchak Avinu, the schus of Yitzchak Avinu, because there's a pasuk in Yeshaya, Mem Aleph Yudalo says, Al Tira'i Tola'as Yaakov. Don't be afraid, the worm of Tola'as Yaakov, I should say. I'm sorry, that was supposed to be Yitzchak. But that was supposed to be Yitzchak altogether. I must have messed up. I think it's Yitzchak. But it is. It's Al Tzvi Ra'i Tolas Yaakov. Alright, we'll see the Or HaChaim later. Pretty sure that's a reference to Yitzchak, but I don't know why. But the Tolas is supposed to be Yitzchak, but I might have messed up the Pasuk. And Ezov is supposed to be the Hyssop that binds them all together, and that's Yaakov Avinu, the Schutz of the third Av, who is the Bechir Sheva Avos that pulls all of them together. So here we go. We got Mashiach ben Yosef, Mashiach ben David, those are the two birds. We have the Schutz of Avram, the Schutz of Yitzchak, and the Schutz of Yaakov, put all those five together, and they're all given over Lametaher, to the Metaher, to Bnei Yisrael, to be a schus for them to be saved. Now the people are definitely not on the highest level right now. Because they're not on the highest level, and they've messed up when it comes to certain things, they need a kapara. A kapara before they're finally saved, before the final gula, they need one last kapara. So what happens over here? Mitziva HaKohen, the Kohen, HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes another command. The Shochat Eset Tzipor HaKos, and he shechts one bird. Meaning, Mashiach ben Yosef is going to have to die. Why? Because there were two things that Bnei Yisrael did wrong. Number one, they were into their taivas. They might have been good people. They were so connected to the ground, they wanted to be part of the earth. That's a kli cheres, a pottery shard, something that's made from the ground. They wanted to be part of the earth and part of the taivas of the world. That's one thing they did wrong. And number two, they didn't learn enough Torah. Al mayim chayim. They didn't get enough of the mayim chayim, which is a reference to it, because they didn't do either one of those enough. Therefore, they're going to be punished. That's what it says over here. Now, the nations are going to fight, and they're the ones who are going to kill him. However, you should know, it's not a guarantee the Mashiach ben Yosef is going to die. There's a famous Abir Yaakov, Rabbeinu Yaakov Abuchatzera, who is the grandfather of the Baba Salu. The Baba Salu was actually named after. His name was Yisrael. But that's because his father, Rabbeinu Masud, was so afraid of his father, Rabbeinu Yaakov, that he couldn't name his son after his father's name, so he called him Yisrael instead of Yaakov. That's why the Baba Sali was named. But the Baba Sali's grandfather has a sefer, the Abir Yaakov, that's written Machsof HaLavan on Chumash, in which he says that all of the tefillah that Moshe Rabbeinu davened by Korach was to save Mashiach ben Yosef from being killed in the war of Gog and Magog. Pretty crazy, right? We do it every single day. During your Shmoneh Esrei, says the Arizal, when you say in Veli Yerushalayim, V'chisei David Avdecha Meheras Atzmiach, you're supposed to think, please don't let Mashiach ben Yosef be destroyed. It's in Sephardic Siddurim, and I've seen it in the Ben Ish Chai Siddur before, in which it says, right by those words, V'chisei David Avdecha, it says right on top, you should think, right then, that Mashiach ben Yosef should never be killed. Says the Arizal, that's what you're supposed to think about, and the Or HaChaim HaKadosh brings it down over here, that you're supposed to think that way, and thus everything will be good. Now,
well, if he doesn't get killed, then what is the kapara?
If he doesn't get killed, we don't need the kapara. That means we davened enough and worked hard enough that we won't need that kapara at the end of days. That's the concept. It could be that there's going to be crazy miracles, but if we don't deserve it, we won't get it. If we deserve it, we'll get it. So we hope that that idea of what we're trying to do every single day will help for Mashiach ben Yosef to be able to survive. Mashiach ben David then comes along, because Mashiach ben Yosef is now gone. And that Tzipor HaChaya, the live bird, meaning referring to David, Mashiach ben David, Yikach Osa, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take it and use that schus along with the Eitz Arez HaShnei Tolas Vaseizot, Avram, Yitzchak, and the schus of all three. V'tobal Osam, V'eset Tzipor HaChaya, V'damet Tzipor HaShchuta Omaim HaChaim. He will dip them, in other words, allow that schus along with the schutz of the shechted bird, which is Mashiach ben Yosef, to be along, to be mechaper for the Mayim HaChayim, for the Torah that was not learned from them. Now we're on Pasuk Zayin. Bnei Yisrael, at that point, are going to be on the seventh level of Tumah, right before Mashiach comes. And on that seventh level of Tumah, they need to build themselves up time after time, seven times over, to be able to get to the highest level, to be able to deserve to be in the Yemos HaMashiach. Thus, the Hizo Alam Yitahir, it's going to be sprinkled, this schutz is going to be given to the Metahir. Sheva Palmim, seven times, for the seven Tumas that they need to get out of. V'tiaro, and they will be purified. V'shilach as Tzipor HaChayel Bnei HaSodeh. And then the live bird, Mashiach ben David, will be sent out to the entire field, referring to this world, Olam Hazeh. It will be sent out to the entire world to do whatever he needs to do, to be Metahir Klal Yisrael, and to allow Klal Yisrael to get whatever they need to have. Not only Klal Yisrael, the whole world will be Metukan through Mashiach ben David. That everything will happen through him, and the whole world will recognize the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and that's what we're saying. That everybody will recognize it and it'll all be from right there. That's the idea. That is when every Jew will be able to remove themselves from the klipa that surrounds them. What it means by a klipa is that every single person has drives and desires and things that just don't let him do what he wants to do. Everybody on the inside wants to do the right thing. We all want to be good people. We know that. We're all like that. But there's something blocking us. There's something that's stopping us. Either it's usually the phone. But if it's not the phone, it's something else. There's something there. It's just stopping us from doing whatever we need to do. So whatever it is, this will finally be able to separate you, break you. It'll knock it all down. And says Pasuk Ches, V'chives ha-metaris begadol. You'll be able to take off the levush of tumah. You'll be able to take off the clothing. You'll be able to rinse it. You'll be able to wash it through so that it becomes tahor. V'gilach es kol sarov. You'll get rid of all your terrible thoughts. The seir, the hair on top of a person's head, stands for a person's thoughts. And what I wrote down over here, and the way it is our attachment to the coarse physical world, the ideas that pop into our head from time to time. We'll get rid of those hairs, and we'll sit and we'll want to learn Torah all day long. Barachatz b'mayim v'tahor. We'll wash ourselves in the waters of Torah. We'll sit and we'll be able to learn Torah all day long, and we'll be tahor. Ve'achar yavol ha'machane. And after that, we'll be able to go to Eretz Yisrael, to the base of Mikdash in Yerushalayim. We'll be able to go into the machane. V'yoshav mi'chutz lo'alo shivas yomim. We still need another tahara process before that point. That's another 7-day process of preparing ourselves for the ultimate Yemos Mashiach and Tchiyas HaMeisim, for the unbelievable times. But once we come back to Eretz Yisrael and the base of Mikdash is rebuilt, there will be a little bit of time, but that's when it is. V'yoshav yom ha'shvi, v'galachas kol sar roshav v'zekanov v'zgavosenov. You'll get rid of all the hair. V'chibetz v'gadol v'rachatz v'zerov v'alayim v'tahir. You'll do it and everything will happen. And then comes Pasuk Yud. U'vayom ha'shmini. On the 8th day, which is beyond nature, this is the unnatural Tchiyas HaMeisim world, which is beyond the natural world that we know about. At that point, there's a process where we're so close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're considered korbanos to Hashem. We're considered like we sacrificed our lives and gave everything we have to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is the ultimate level of Mesiris Nefesh. That's where we are, and that's the idea of Tchiyas HaMeisim Olam. That's the remez of all these psukim. I don't know how you can find that in the first place, to be able to come up with those ideas in the first place. But the Orach Chaim says all these psukim, from the beginning up until Pasuk Yud, are all referenced to this. There is, as a side note, 3 other Ramazim that can be said over here. They're all brought down in the sefer that I have on the Abir Yaakov. It's a whole big sefer, and I don't know who the second parish is from, but one is from the Abir Yaakov himself. They also give Ramazim that are very similar, but just little differences, little nuances of differences between one and the other, going through one to the other. It's an unbelievable idea. Absolutely unbelievable idea. And all we can get from this is that this is going to happen. And it's going to happen soon, and you just hope that it's going to happen while we're still alive and not after we're already dead. We don't have that many years. I'm sure it can happen tomorrow, so we'll just wait and say something, even though I know it's not going to come in Erev Shabbos because of the Gemara and Erevin, right? Let him come in Erev Shabbos, and after he comes, we'll say, why did you come in Erev Shabbos? And he'll answer us with the Tosfos. That'll be fine. That won't be an issue.
What does it matter for alive or dead? Meaning, if it comes, it comes. Like, what does it matter whether
we miss the Yemos Mashiach? Simple answer is, there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin. It's either Tzadi Chasim Adiz or Tzadi Tesla Aleph. I don't remember. That says that there were 3 Amorayim. The only one that said not like this was Rabbi Yosef. I forgot who. Rabba, Rabbi Yochanan, and one other person said, Yesi Beloach Mine, let Mashiach come, but I don't want to see him. Meaning, I don't want the travails of, you know, the times of Mashiach right before Mashiach comes, because there's so many crazy things. So Yesi Beloach Mine. Rabbi Yosef said, Yesi Beloach Mine, let him come and let me see. Could be because Rabbi Yosef was blind. I have no idea, but that was an interesting line from Rabbi Yosef, that he said, Yesi Beloach Mine, let him come so I can see, but that's there. But I will point out something to you. If you notice, everybody always thought, I mean, if you look at the writings of Rabbi Chana Wasserman or the Chafetz Chaim saying what's going to be with World War II, and that World War II is going to be such a terrible war, and it's going to be Gog and Magog, etc. Or if it's not Gog and Magog, it's going to be the end of time and Mashiach's going to come soon. The Chafetz Chaim was always quoted as saying there's going to be a third war. But if you look at it, it's very interesting the way that it goes. When we left Mitzrayim, when did we stop working? When would you have said we stopped working? It's not a trick question. It's just sort of a thought question. There is no real answer to this question. It's actually a machlokas. When did we stop working?
The first month,
after the machlokas, right? Now, it's possible there was machlokas in with the machlokas. Which one they would have stopped by? Was it Dever or was it Dam? There's big questions about that. And maybe because they both start with Dalet, and there was a big question of, well, what did Tzach HaDash V'Achav means? There's a whole question with that. So it's possible. It's possible it started 6 months before that, right? Right after Moshe Rabbeinu said, and right after Moshe Rabbeinu was told by Paro, Nir Pim Atem Nir Pim. There's a lot of kashas. When exactly all the work stopped. But you notice, the hardships that the Jews went through were for those however you want to call it, 86 years, 117 years, 210 years while they were in Mitzrayim, and it stopped 6 months, 3 months, 12 months before they left Mitzrayim. It stopped. They weren't working. So the last couple months, they were like living as like sort of freed slaves in the land of Mitzrayim. They couldn't leave, but they were sort of living there, and that was that. Meaning, they were in Gullus, but things were pretty good. We've never had a Gullus like this, what we're in right now, where things are pretty darn good. And you can't really complain about anything except first world problems of like, oh my gosh, my cell phone broke again. Or, oh my gosh, the air conditioning is not on as well as I'd like it to be. Or, oh, my third car is out. I mean, those are first world problems. We don't really have, Jews have never lived in this world before. It makes sense that we're in the last 6 months. We don't know what the Makos are. We have no idea what that means. But at this point, it seems to be that Mashiach, let's hope that Mashiach and Yosef doesn't have to die, that World War II was the end of all the wars, that was the Gog and Magog, that was the ultimate destruction of the Jews, which really wiped out however much of the nation, a third or however you want to call it, of however many people died, and now we're right now, we're at the end of the Avoda, and that soon, this is when Moshe Rabbeinu gets up and says, I'm the Mashiach. As a side note, did Moshe Rabbeinu know he was Mashiach before he was 80 years old? He's 80, shepherding for a non-Jew in the middle of Midian. And a Kadosh Baruch Hu comes up to him and says, go save the Jews. That wouldn't shock anyone. I mean, it's 80 years old. He's never gotten a Nevuah before, and he doesn't live with the Jews in Mitzrayim, and he's the one that's the Moshiach. So in a line, that could be like some random guy in the middle of Tanzania, I don't know, like somewhere weird, Zimbabwe. He's like getting up one day, and like Akash Baruch Hu says, it's time for you to go. And he's just like, what? How am I going to do this? How am I going to be the guy? And like he comes in, and we're just like, oh, well, at least he's not, he doesn't look Haredi, he doesn't look Mizrahi, he sort of looks like African. It's sort of like, he kills everything, you know? You can't really argue against that, so then it's all good. You know the guy has to look like nothing in order for it to work for all of Klal Yisrael. He's going to get up, he's going to wear like some weird type hat, in a long, like, colorful cloak, and he's going to be like, I'm the Mashiach. And everybody's going to be like, either you're crazy and you're living in Tel Aviv pizza, or you're really Mashiach. It's possible that you really are. It's going to be totally different times. But the fact is, it's got to be near. It's got to be near. And we just hope that the prophet's time is.
Why do we think it's so much nearer now than a time after the Second World War?
After the Second World War, and it's been a long time. It's been a long time. I don't want to say, look, hopefully, let's just say it's tomorrow and then it's all good. And if it's not tomorrow, it's the next day. And if it's not the next day, it's Sunday. But I don't want to push it off any further. I mean, the Cubs and the White Sox are going nowhere this year. I don't think the Bears are going to win the division. The Bulls are out until Derrick Rose breaks his other leg, whatever it is. And the Hawks, we're missing two captains. I mean, we got nothing here. So let's go somewhere else. Oh, I know there's soccer. I'm sorry, Benjamin. But aside from that, right, there's nothing. What else are we going for? We got nothing else going. All right, new. So hopefully it'll be speedily in our days. I think that's the line for it. Just go ahead, guys. Yeah, let's make